This is the Bill Carroll Show on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Well, not easy to be a talk radio host on a day like this. Anything going on? Anything to talk about? Wow. Just wow. I mean, the president of the United States, still maybe the second most powerful nation in the world. Hello, China. How you doing? He would argue with that, I'm sure. But the president of the United States has COVID-19. So does his wife, but not his son. That's good news. So in the middle of an election campaign with just weeks to go until he's reelected or a new president is elected, it is stunning. It's really stunning news and almost overshadows the fact that in this country, we're seeing the fall spike earlier, maybe bigger than we thought it was going to be. It really depends on who you talk to. It's really hard to know. Ontario, for example, just today is reporting the biggest one-day COVID count since the pandemic began. Now, many more people are being tested. The number of people who are actually testing positive has gone way down. They tend to be younger people, although that number is starting to change a little bit now. It's not just the under 40 crowd that's getting it. So it's a big deal. The nation's capital just had by far its largest number, blew through the previous records. It's 141. And Ottawa's chief medical officer of health is saying the system, the healthcare system in this city, the one I'm broadcasting from right now, is in crisis. So is that too strong a word? I don't know. Anyway, we'll carry the Ontario update because it's expected that a new system is being brought into place to alert us as to the level of COVID in the communities. And there may be some new orders, some new crackdowns coming as well. If you don't live in Ontario, you could be looking at your future. A week down the road, 2 weeks down the road, who knows? So we'll spend some time on all of those issues, of course, coming up. But the big story, absolutely, the president of the United States has tested positive. He's already, along with his wife, they're both showing some mild symptoms. Now, he's in a couple of high-risk categories. He's obese, although I would say barely, but medically he's in the obese category. He's also older, in his 70s. Those are risk factors. You also have to wonder if he's showing symptoms already. Well, he's certainly not going to have one of those asymptomatic cases. Melania is apparently showing some mild symptoms as well. And their media advisor, Hope Hicks, who we learned yesterday was already positive for COVID-19, she's apparently having a tougher time. She's having some more serious symptoms. The U.S. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, reacted to this news on MSNBC this morning.
This is tragic. It's very sad. But it also is something that going into crowds, unmasked and all the rest, was sort of a brazen invitation for something like this to happen. Sad that it did, but nonetheless hopeful that it will be a transition to a saner approach to what this virus is all about.
I would expect that's her trying very hard not to say, I told you so, and looking too smug about it, because that is just a bad look, because we are talking about a human being and a potentially deadly virus. I know there are people out there saying, well, you know what? Maybe if he'd worn a mask a little more often, hadn't flouted the public safety precautions, all of those things, this wouldn't have happened. But I mean, it's no reason to wish the worst on anybody. She says if the president can get the virus, then really it shows anyone can.
So maybe now that people who see the president of the United States with all the protection that he has and the first lady still having this exposure, it might be, as you say, a learning experience. But more than learning, it has to be something that is acted upon.
Pelosi is second in line for the president, second after the vice president, who's first in line. So the question is being asked on U.S. cable networks this morning. What's going on in the White House? Are they prepared if he gets sick enough that he can't govern? Is there somebody ready to step up? Is that process already underway? And so they asked her, as second in line, have you been contacted in any way?
No, they haven't, but that is an ongoing, not with the White House, but with the military, quite frankly, in terms of the some officials in the government. But that, you know, let us just all pray for the president's health. Thank God the vice president has tested negatively and the second lady as well.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch CNN because they are reporting this around the clock, as you would expect. I'm not criticizing that, but they have the current COVID numbers. Number of cases around the world, number of deaths up on the screen at all times. And Fox News is kind of trying to remind you, well, our president is not the only one who's weak. Joe Biden is being tested right now, and he's not campaigning this morning until he gets the results. Well, he was just in the same room as somebody who tested positive, a number of people who tested positive. I think that's something he absolutely should do, but doesn't look like he got all that close to the president. So what happens now? Let's see if we can get a little more information out of Washington. And we have someone from the Washington Post, national political correspondent, Philip Bump. Philip, is it even possible to overstate how big a story this is?
No, probably not. I mean, we've never seen a scenario like this where, you know, someone who's up for re-election in about a month suddenly comes down with an illness which takes them offline potentially for weeks on end. You know, that's in a best-case scenario probably. So, this is hugely impactful. In particular, too, because it reinforces one of the things Donald Trump least wanted to talk about, which was his response to the pandemic.
Does this help him or hurt him? And is it even possible to gauge that right now?
It's going to be hard to gauge that. I think a lot of it depends on how he handles the illness. I mean, if he, in a week, is able to say, hey, you know what, I feel fine, everything's cool, and, you know, here I am, and I told you this thing wasn't a big deal, that will probably mute some of the concern and might even help boost him a little bit in terms of, you know, what the coronavirus, how people feel about his treatment of the or handling of the pandemic. But, you know, that's a long shot. I mean, he's obviously got a lot of factors which might mean that he's in for a rough time here. You know, obviously we all hope that isn't the case, but, you know, that's an absolute best-case scenario. It's hard to see how this really helps him.
When you called us, I was just starting to make comments on how the different news media covering that, the cable news networks, you know, you got CNN on one side and Fox on the other, and it's been entirely predictable so far. Even how long he has to stay in isolation or quarantine, whatever word you want to use, Fox is pushing the 10-day narrative, CNN is pushing the 14-day narrative, and that's important because how long does he have to stay in the White House in the middle of a campaign? And also, if it's only 10 days, he can make the next election debate. If it's 14 days, it'll be a very different picture. What are you hearing about how long he intends to, if he remains with just mild symptoms, how long is he going to stay in the White House?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that it's important to remember that Donald Trump is not your average patient, right? You know, he has a lot of things at his disposal, which most people don't, including all sorts of testing regimens. They can do all sorts of things with him to help protect him and isolate him in a way that you can't with a normal person. If he has only mild symptoms, you know, I think it's probably highly unlikely that he stays in isolation for the entire period that a normal person would be recommended to do, you know, in part because he's also the president of the United States, and one of the things that we've seen him do over and over is sort of make his own rules for how this thing gets handled. Is that the safest thing to do? Probably not. Is it necessarily risky? Not necessarily, you know, given that he has all these resources at his disposal. So I think we should just sort of, everything that we know about how most people deal with this thing, sort of throw that out the window.
Thanks, Philip. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks.
Washington Post national political correspondent, Philip Bump. So one of the first reactions I'm seeing that's the most common right now is people are just not believing it. A lot of people are just not believing it. They think that it's fake news somehow and that this is a lot of people. And maybe he kind of brought that upon himself. We're going to try to debunk some of that and explain it coming up next.
As the story changes, we react. This is the Bill Carroll Show.
With numbers across the country, COVID-19 positive tests heading in the wrong direction, Ontario is announcing, CTV News has learned, that you'll only be able to get a test by appointment only very soon. The government is dealing with a 90,000 test backlog right now. So we expect that to be part of the premier's announcement today, along with maybe some new measures for Ontario. Don't know when they'll come into effect. Whole new system, a coding system like Quebec's, where your town or area will be designated as a yellow, orange, or red. They may even designate some areas immediately. So that's one piece of breaking news. Another piece of breaking news, just getting confirmed now, NBC News says Joe Biden, former vice president and candidate for the president of the United States, has tested negative for COVID-19. This on the day that the president of the United States and his wife have tested positive. Interesting that the president tested negative yesterday morning, but positive by last night. And that there's one report, it's a reliable source, that actually broke the news about Hope having COVID-19. She's reporting that his staff had started to worry about him on Wednesday, that he seemed off. He seemed lethargic. He didn't seem himself. So those symptoms are starting to kick in pretty early on for him. Anyway, we'll let you know. We're going to stay on that story too. So 1 o'clock, we're going to carry the premier with some big changes possibly coming to Ontario, which could really, I think, be a harbinger for what's going to happen in a lot of the other provinces across the country, wherever you're listening to us right now. Hope not, of course. But those numbers need some perspective, so we'll try to give you those numbers, the number of new cases I'm talking about now, as the show goes on. Anita McBride is on the line, former assistant to President George W. Bush and chief of staff to the First Lady, Laura Bush. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you for having me, Bill.
Doesn't get much bigger than this. The president of the United States tests positive. What do you think is going on in the White House right now? How do you think that situation unfolds? Just logistically, is the president is he in the Oval Office, would you expect, or would he be in the quarters, or will he quarantine alone or with the First Lady? Any guesses of that, just based on how you know the White House functions?
Well, I'm sure that he is not in the Oval Office. And in fact, I'm quite sure and can say with 100% certainty he is in the residence and quarantining there, as is the First Lady. I mean, probably are separated as well. The White House staff, the medical unit staff, the chief doctor, to the president, will be extremely vigilant on monitoring their symptoms and with, constant observation, as they should. It is a big deal when the health of a president of the United States is in question. So he will, of course, have great care. That is the one fortunate thing when you're the leader of the country. Everybody else on the staff, of course, I'm sure they're concerned and they're worried about their own personal situation. When you're working in the White House, you are in close quarters. Your offices are many people in one office. You're sort of on top of each other. Real estate is a prime there. So whether they be operations, management and operations folks at the White House are now going to enforce greater teleworking for everyone, or how they are going to also keep the staff safe, because they get tested every day. But clearly now the president's been exposed and the president has COVID. The contact tracing will have to really be, incredibly kicked into gear right now.
Do you think there's a lot of focus on what happens should the president become incapacitated? That doesn't mean that he dies, but if he gets very sick and can't function, maybe even has to be heavily sedated to go on a respirator, which we've seen happen. So is there much focus on that? And is the president involved in that? Is that where staff will kind of be whispering behind his back about this?
Well, no, your president certainly would not be. And this president has total mental capacity, so he is certainly going to be made aware of any, thing as his symptoms, if his symptoms do change. And of course, we hope that they don't and hope that they remain mild and they're fine. But there is a continuity of operations and a continuity of government, system in place here in our country. And anybody who's in leadership or in senior positions around the president certainly know what that is. I don't think that anyone feels it's getting to that point. Certainly not now, but, this is a rapidly evolving situation. It does appear the president has been communicating with his senior staff, certainly with the chief of staff today, on a number of issues, including the jobs numbers that came out. So I don't think that there is any immediate concern at all about him not being able to perform his job.
I'm a bit surprised we haven't seen him yet. Are you, Anita?
You know what? I am a little bit at that this is typical of the, president to want to see and be seen and show that he's in command and show that he's in charge. At the very least, seeing further tweets from him, which is the way he communicates the most with people. I would have to imagine, though, that we will hear from him at some point today. I just can't see how the president would stay silent. Plus, also, let's not forget, we're in the height and the heat of a campaign. He has, for months, criticized Joe Biden for being in his basement, right, while he's out doing these incredible rallies. This has got to be, you know, difficult for him to now have to be off the road.
Yeah, this close to an election, how much of the day-to-day conversation in the White House has switched from running, you know, the business of government and policy to the election? Is there a dividing wall there? The campaign is over here and the White House staff is over here?
Well, the governing part is constantly and always going on. I mean, there are teams of, you know, senior staff that have, you know, different portfolios under them. That is their job. That is what they are focused on. The chief of staff, of course, is in a very different position. He's got to be managing all of those things and have his finger on the pulse of both the governance and the politics, the Supreme Court nomination that's going on at the same time. I mean, governance doesn't stop and politicking doesn't stop because someone is sick. You know, those things have to continue to go on concurrently. So that I have never been in the White House three different times myself and through different political campaigns, re-elections, and all. Both of these things operate concurrently, simultaneously. That's just the nature of being in a high-stress environment like that.
Yeah, you've also worked with a First Lady, Laura Bush.
Sure.
And so that can be a fairly busy job. Some would say it's been less busy under the current administration.
Right.
But with her down and out with COVID-19 as well after testing positive, that has an impact on the day-to-day affairs, and especially during an election, right, where you want her out.
Well, sure. Now, she has not gone out very much on campaign events, so whether that schedule of politicking on, you know, on her part has been affected, that is a little more unclear to me. But social events that I know were on the White House schedule for the next week have all people on those guest lists have all received notices from the social office today saying those events are postponed, not canceled, but postponed to be rescheduled at a later date. She also, you know, has her parents living with her at the White House. They're elderly, so I imagine everyone has been tested in the family to make sure everyone is safe and healthy. But, you know, if you have to quarantine somewhere, quarantining in the White House is probably one of the more pleasant places that you can do it. But certainly it's not without worry.
Thank you, Anita. It's like you took us on an episode of The West Wing. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Anita McBride, former assistant to President George W. Bush and chief of staff to First Lady Laura Bush. Don't forget, we got a big announcement coming in Ontario, some disturbing numbers and some maybe changes, could be new actions taken by the premier today. We're waiting for that. If you're listening on CJD in Montreal, you're going to be pulling away because Quebec, of course, has had some pretty disturbing numbers as well. Again, they need a little more context than I'm going to give you here, but not as quite as panicked as I was in the spring. But CJD will pull away to carry the premier of Quebec as well. So that's all coming up. I'm Bill Carroll. It's the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Talking to the newsmakers every day. The conversation continues with Bill Carroll.
Yeah, a lot going on today. We have some big announcements expected today. Ontario's Premier Ford likely to announce some maybe new measures. There may be new measures. I don't think, my guess is he's going to outline the new system we're hearing about, yellow, orange, and red. And if you get to be a red zone, then new measures will take place. Don't know that he'll announce any new measures specifically, although the numbers in Ontario have a lot of people disturbed. I think we're overreacting a little bit, but so there may be some. We're going to carry that in Ontario coming up here in just 25 minutes or so, or when it begins, maybe a little later. So you don't have to go anywhere. We're going to have that for you. Quebec also, big announcements today expected again at 1 o'clock because the numbers also have been causing some alarm. in Quebec, and some of the other local stations across the country may also pull away. So we'll leave that up to them. But the Ontario press conference, I think it'll be pretty interesting for everybody to listen to, because I think it's where the country may be headed in terms of our reaction to what's going on with COVID-19. I have to say, though, I keep saying we need to put some of this in context. I heard the premier of Quebec yesterday talk about how we have to take more personal responsibility. And that's difficult, he acknowledges, because we've lost a little bit of faith in public officials. That the messaging has been a bit all over the place, and we just don't know what to believe. And that makes it tough to convince people that they have to behave in a certain way in order to control the spread of this virus. Although I think at the same time, I was getting the message from Quebec that most of the spread is happening at private parties and at private homes. So what are they doing? They're closing restaurants in Montreal and in Quebec City and in Lévis across the river. It makes no sense to me. Getting the same message in Ontario. You know, the biggest way to get this, 2 out of 4 people in Ontario get it in the home. So from someone you're living with. Outside, though, so that means if you don't leave and you don't come in contact with it, you're fine. Outside, about 1/4 of the cases are from gatherings like weddings and parties and backyard barbecues. And yet we're talking today that there may be crackdowns coming on gyms and on restaurants. It doesn't quite add up to me. The other story that's really interesting, it tells you where we are in terms of trust in public institutions, elected officials, public health officials, the media. People don't believe it, even when you hear that the president of the United States has tested positive for COVID-19 and is showing some mild symptoms very early on. He was negative in a test yesterday morning, tested positive late last night. Professor Tim Caulfield with the Canada Research Chair is the Canada Research Chair in Health and Policy. Also host of the Timothy Caulfield Guide to Cheating Death on Netflix, a series that debunks perfectly intelligent actresses who seem to have a feminine device that cure anything. But he takes them apart, and so he's become kind of famous in his own right, and he's on the line right now. Thanks for joining us again, Professor. It's been a while.
Thanks for having me on, Bill.
So I'm not exaggerating. The biggest reaction I got, and I get a lot of texts and emails because I host a morning radio show, disproportionate amount to the average person, I would say. Most of them said, is the president making this up to help his campaign, or are the Democrats exaggerating? People don't believe what they hear anymore. And it's a bit ironic because if anybody's tried to spread misinformation about COVID-19, it's the very guy many people now don't believe has it.
It is incredible. You know, I got the same stuff on my social media feeds, and I like to believe that my community is pretty science-based, and I got, I'm not sure I believe this, what is the strategy here? But look, you are exactly right. There was a study that came out yesterday, the day before, and it's a preprint, but still from a good team at Cornell. They found that Donald Trump is the number one source of misinformation around COVID. So that, the depth of the irony, right, is incredible. Now, I hope he, the First Lady and Trump recover, but it's still not, hard to sort of embrace that deep irony that now he has it.
Yeah, it is. And I don't think, even if people are quietly wishing him something other than well, no one in politics is going to say that out loud. How do we get here, though, Timothy? How do we get to the point where we give more credibility to Karen on Facebook and Gwyneth Paltrow in mainstream media than we do to scientists and public health officials?
Well, it's incredible. I think, I've talked to you about this before. I've been studying misinformation for decades, and I've never seen anything like this. And at the beginning of the pandemic, I had kind of hoped that we'd be going the opposite direction, right? That the public would now appreciate the value of science and the harm that misinformation can do. And we've kind of flipped it. We're going in the exact opposite direction. I think part of it is actually the spread of misinformation and the incredible traction that's getting. And research has shown that, right? It is the power of social media to spread this misinformation. Again, we have good data to show that's exactly what's happening. And it's also less than ideal, as you talked about in the intro, less than ideal communication from public health authorities. We really need them to step up and have good science communication strategies. That, unfortunately, is part of the story, too. And I think you also layer on top of that, people are getting frustrated with the pandemic. People, we've moved from fear, right, to anger and frustration, and there, again, there's data to back that up. And I think we're more likely to believe the misinformation when we are in that kind of emotional state.
Well, yeah, I think part of that is that we don't want the pandemic to be real. We want it to go away. We don't know how it happened. It's one of those random things that happen in nature that you kind of want to believe someone's, well, it's got to be the Chinese. They did it on purpose, or they're blowing out of proportion. It can't be that bad. And then on top of it, maybe it's not quite as deadly as we thought it might be in the beginning. So we have a pretty good summer too. Everyone kind of went back to normal, but you want to believe many of these theories. I think that's part of the reason that, because I, you know what I naively said, Professor, at the beginning of this thing, I said, you know, those anti-vaxxers will be first in line now.
Yep.
Not true. Yep. They doubled down.
I said the, you know, exact same thing. You know, look, I knew the hardcore anti-vaxxers were going to try to leverage this, right, to spread their message. And I've been studying this for a long time. I did not anticipate it getting this bad. And the anti-vaxxers kind of, I don't want to say they're winning, but their message is getting, is getting out there. The other thing that we haven't talked about is the degree to which this misinformation is now sort of attached to an ideological position. And that's created this polarization. And again, a lot of that's come from the South, from Trump and their political divide. But that's having, I think, an impact in Canada too. So, you know, masks have now become a political, you know, ideological symbol. Who would have believed that? You know, hydroxychloroquine has become an ideological and political symbol. You know, that's hard to
believe.
I wonder
if the president's on that today.
Oh, I suspect something's going on there, and we'll hear more about that. But look, there was just another study that came out, a fairly well-run clinical trial, placebo-controlled, found no benefit for hydroxychloroquine. So, but still, you know, a large percentage of Canadians, I think the last study found 23% of Canadians believe that hydroxychloroquine works, despite what the science says, right? Again, it's become politicized. It's become an ideological symbol.
Thanks, Professor. The mask has become a flag to show you show people which side you're on. Professor Timothy Caulfield, Canada Research Chair in Health, Law, and Policy, also host of The Guide to Cheating Death on Netflix, a series that debunks the benefits or lack thereof from health trends and fads. Fascinating guy, and boy, it's become an even more interesting and important area these days. What about snowbirds this year? At first, I didn't have a lot of sympathy for them. Oh, you can't go to Florida, you know, you're at... But they don't have a lot of choice because they have nowhere else to live. We're going to talk about that coming up. I'm Bill Carroll.
When important decisions are made, we report. Here's Bill Carroll.
Big, big day. The President of the United States has tested positive. Hope Hicks, one of his chief media advisors, tested positive the day before. He's apparently quite sick, not doing as well so far as the President and First Lady, who are showing just mild symptoms. NBC announcing that Notre Dame's president, Fr. John Jenkins, who was at the White House SCOTUS announcement on Saturday, has also tested positive now for COVID. So, you know, we hear these stories. I was reading earlier in the week. I hoped I'd get time to talk about it in depth on this show, but just the way things have unfolded with Premier Ford, Premier Legault coming up live here in the next couple of minutes with some big announcements to make. Haven't really had a chance to talk about it, but read about something called the K factor. You've heard maybe the R factor when it comes to pandemics. That's the reproductive rate. One person gets it, they give it to two people, the R rate is two. So you want to keep it below one. The K factor is more complicated than that. And it has to do with the fact that this virus, most people who get it actually don't give it to anyone. But a very few people give it to a lot of people, the super spreaders. And there have been lots of stories in the news about super spreaders. The wedding in Oshawa, for example. There's another story in Ottawa where two people waiting for the results of their COVID test went to five bars. And the result is they're all shut down. So a few people spread it to a lot of people. And that's what this looks like with the president and his entourage. You got a lot of people in close contact for a fairly long period of time, not great air circulation. Some are wearing masks, some are not. It's just a recipe for COVID. And now I'm seeing all these numbers of people in that circle starting to pop up with positive tests. And it's not surprising, and it shouldn't be surprising, that the president of the United States, who has kind of flouted the public health guidelines and been to lots of events and not wearing masks and getting really close to people, it was almost just a matter of time. Now, on another story, saw a tweet yesterday that suggested Canadian snowbirds who are thinking of staying home because they're afraid of going to the southern U.S. maybe ought to think twice. The one tweet actually that I saw specifically said the number of people, the number of positive cases in Florida and the number of positive cases in Quebec are actually pretty similar. So your risk is just as great if you stay. Evan Rakowski is Director of Research Communications for the Canadian Snowbird Association. How you doing, Evan?
Thank you for having me on.
So, you know, at first I thought, why do people even want to go to Florida in the middle of a pandemic? Then I realized I saw parked in the local library back in the spring a number of snowbirds. They arrived back here and they had nowhere to go. The campsites were not open. So I imagine they're facing the same problem on the way right now, right? Because campsites are closing. You might have a really nice trailer, but that's not a place you want to put up stay inside for a Canadian winter. So I'm imagining, Evan, a lot of snowbirds feel like they don't have a lot of choice but to get out of town.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest groups, obviously, that is in a precarious position right now are those full-time RVers. So these are individuals that spend 6 months in Canada and 6 months in the U.S., and with the land border closed now to all non-essential travel, they've had to make alternative arrangements, right? We're hearing from members who are full-time RVers who have made plans to go out west. A lot of them are booking up campsites in B.C. just because, again, the land border at this time is closed. It looks like it's going to be closed for the foreseeable future, likely well into 2021. So those people really aren't left with a lot of options at this time.
Well, a bit of a surprising announcement that's breaking as well is that Canada has agreed to make it easier for people to come into the country if they have family here. The family reunification rules, which have already allowed many Americans and Canadian Americans to come back home, they're being loosened up. So the border is just a little less tight than it used to be. For Canadian snowbirds, though, they can go to the United States, right? There's nothing stopping them from making that trip. They're not locked out.
So there's nothing preventing them from leaving. The issue is they wouldn't be able to enter the U.S. by the land crossing. So they can't actually drive into the U.S. if the reason that they're going down there is for leisure or recreational purposes. The only way they can actually get to the U.S. currently is if they fly. So when Canada and the U.S. were developing their regulations in regards to the border closure as a result of the pandemic, on the U.S. side, they only referred to the land crossing. So people have been flying in and out of the U.S. Canadian citizens can still fly to the U.S. You know, Canadian airlines as well as U.S. airlines are flying into and out of the U.S. currently.
Could you ship your vehicle ahead of you and then meet it down there?
You can, and that's an option that a lot of our members are exercising now, or those that are actually choosing to go down there. So you would be permitted to fly down there, and then you would have your vehicle shipped. So just
yeah, but you have one of those RVs that looks like a bus. That's probably not cheap to ship.
No. I mean, that could absolutely be very costly. And we have over 70% of our members that do travel to the U.S. They do travel by car. So, again, they've had to make these alternative arrangements if they do choose to go to the U.S. this season.
The other thing, though, even if it's true that their caseload is not much worse than ours at the moment, that can change, right? Their weather will change more slowly. It's less obvious, but there's still a flu season there. They may still have a COVID-19 season. So I think if I were a snowbird, I'd be worried that I could get down there and the situation could change, and then I'm in trouble.
Well, that's the thing with the pandemic is it's been changing by the hour, essentially, right, in terms of the caseload and obviously the developments that have been related to the pandemic. So, again, obviously, before snowbirds make the decision to go down there, they obviously want to do their due diligence, not just looking at the caseload at the state level, but also the local level. Some places, some counties and cities have obviously been hit harder than others. You're looking at, you know, Miami and South Beach area. That has been, you know, primarily hit hard. usually that's not really a snowbird spot, but definitely something that they would want to look into quite in depth before they make a departure down there.
You also, if you're a snowbird, you tend to be in that more high-risk category. And can you get health insurance right now in the middle of a pandemic if you're 68-year-old Canadian heading to Florida?
So there are options now available for Canadians that are interested in traveling during the pandemic, which would actually provide coverage for COVID-19. What we're advising our members is, again, if they do choose to travel, what they should do is they should read their policies quite carefully, because what some insurance providers are doing is basically they have their block coverage where they're going to cover you for up to $2 or $5 million for any out-of-country emergencies that transpire. But if anything COVID-related happens to you, they're going to cap that limit to, let's say, $200,000. And again, you know, with the U.S. medical system, that's not really going to go that far. So that's, again, something that people would need to take into consideration before they make the decision to leave.
So is there any way you can guess at what percentage of Canadians who normally go to the U.S., the snowbirds, what it will be this year? Will it be half of what it might be? Will it be less or more than that?
I mean, just based on the numbers we have now, it would be probably less than half of the traditional snowbird market that would be making the trip down there. In total, you know, if you consider a snowbird as somebody that spends, you know, a month or more in the U.S., you're looking at probably over 1 million people that actually do leave Canada and go to places like the U.S. to escape the winters. So you're definitely looking at least 50% of those people will not be traveling this season.
Well, many of them, though, may be thinking, I can be basically under house arrest at my home in, northern Quebec or Ontario somewhere or Alberta, or I could be down in the south of the U.S. and be a virtual prisoner there. The view out the window is better. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it, Evan. Thank you, Evan. And Rakowski, Director of Research Communications for the Canadian Snowbird Association. I stumbled on his name, and so he hung up on me. Can't blame him for that. Okay, so a lot happening here. In Ontario, Premier Ford is speaking. In Quebec, you'll hear from your premier as well. Could be some big announcements coming up. We're carrying it live.
This is the Bill Carroll Show on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Ontario's Premier Doug Ford has just come out of a cabinet meeting where they were thought to be discussing some new restrictions and a new way of deciding which parts of the province should be locked down. The numbers in Ontario are not encouraging, and he looks very grim. He's just getting underway. Stand by if you own restaurants, bars, banquet halls, gyms. Could be something for you. Also, more of us could be wearing masks very soon, too. So there's going to be a lot to this. Here he is, Premier Doug Ford.
And as Premier, it's my duty to protect the people. Throughout this pandemic, we have made some tough but necessary decisions, always based on the best medical advice and scientific evidence available, and after consulting with the Chief Medical Officer and the Public Health Measures Table, we will be bringing in more public health restrictions to try to stop this virus from spreading any further. Effective tomorrow at 12:01 a.m., we're expanding the masking policies already in place in many communities to the entire province. That means wearing a mask when shopping, when taking public transit, and when at work if you can't keep 2 meters between you and your colleagues. As much as possible, we also need to limit close contact with anyone outside your households. This will be especially important to consider as we look ahead to Thanksgiving next weekend. We also have to extend the pause on the reopening of any other businesses or facilities for another 28 days. And we are bringing in additional targeted measures for hotspot areas for Ottawa, Toronto, and Peel region. Effective at 12:01 a.m., restaurants, bars, and nightclubs in Ottawa and Peel must limit their capacity to 100 customers or less. Toronto Public Health has already decided to limit capacity to 75, with no more than 6 people per table, and each customer's contact information must be collected for contact tracing. For gyms and fitness centers, Group exercise classes will be limited to 10 people, and the facility must limit its capacity to 50 people or less. For banquet halls and event spaces, they must limit to 6 people per table and have no more than 50 people in the facility at a time. My friends, this is serious. We have to offer our full support and every power possible to help our healthcare sector fight this second wave. The weather is driving more people indoors, which has led to more community spread and a surge in testing. As the weather begins to worsen, we can't have people waiting in the cold, waiting in the rain and snow to get a test. So today, we're announcing new changes to help the assessment centers get ready for the winter. Starting Tuesday, October the 6th, all assessment centers will be moving to appointment-based testing only in order for our assessment centers to make the necessary adjustments in order to winterize their operations. Beginning Sunday, October the 4th, assessment centers will not be accepting walk-ins. The vast majority of the assessment centers in Ontario that already offer testing by appointments will continue to operate as usual while we make this important transition. If you have already booked an appointment, don't worry, it will proceed as scheduled. Up to 80 pharmacy locations in Ontario will also continue to offer tests by appointment, with more pharmacies to offer tests in the coming weeks. While they transition, the assessment centers will also take the opportunity to conduct a deep cleaning. This will also give the labs a critical opportunity to clear the testing backlog. My friends, these changes are absolutely necessary. Being able to make an appointment, it gives certainty. It will make sure folks don't have to wait outside for hours. It will help us ensure necessary screening takes place to ensure those who need a test can get a test. And it will help us ensure we can get your results back sooner. We're working with our partners in hospitals and assessment centers to make sure this transition to testing by appointment is as smooth as possible. But folks, I have to ask for your patience as we make these changes. It might take a few days to schedule your test at the start, but we're working around the clock to keep those times as low as possible. We'll be adopting the latest testing technology and methods to allow us to test more people faster. I want to reassure people, the entire team at Ontario Health, the hospitals and public health staff, they're all working extremely hard. And I have to send a very special thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart to the incredible, and they're very incredible, lab technicians. Thank you to everyone who has been working tirelessly around the clock for months without a break to make sure we can keep testing people each and every day. Folks, these people have been unsung heroes. Thanks to them, we have done more testing than all of Canada combined. So please, if you know a lab technician, thank them for everything they've been doing. By working together and supporting them, we can keep people safe and turn the tide of this battle. Thank you, and God bless the people of Ontario. Now I'll pass it over to Minister Elliott.
The iHeartRadio Talk
Network.
Thank
you, Premier, and good afternoon. Protecting the health and well-being of Ontarians has been our government's top priority since the very start of this outbreak. This is our duty to the people of this province. Now, as the Premier has just outlined, we are seeing more and more positive cases, and we need to take action to break this trend and ensure we can keep Ontarians safe. To do that, we need to take hard but necessary measures. Wearing masks while working indoors if physical distancing is not possible, limiting close contact to only those in our households, and placing limits on our bars, restaurants, gyms, and banquet halls, and providing additional guidance for seniors on how to minimize their risk of acquiring COVID-19, including for upcoming annual gatherings such as Thanksgiving and Remembrance Day. These are all actions we can take that will help us to prevent further spread of the virus. We received a letter from the Medical Officer of Health for the City of Toronto requesting these measures, echoing the concerns we have been hearing from many other public health units across the province. And we are working closely with the city, as we are with all of our partners in public health, to address these concerns. We are also taking important steps to ensure anyone who needs a test can get one quickly so they don't have to wait for long periods of time to receive a diagnosis. Moving to appointment-based testing, continuing our mobile testing and pop-up testing centers to target and reach vulnerable populations, and investing to increase our lab capacity even further. These are all steps that are going to help us identify new cases more quickly and help us to contain the spread. These measures will help us protect each other. There is a lot at stake. We need to take these very necessary steps to protect our economy, to protect our schools, and to keep everything open so that people can continue to earn a living. The reality is that these measures are necessary to protect the health and well-being of Ontarians and, of course, to prevent future lockdowns. So I want to emphasize once again the need for people to continue to follow public health advice. Please stay home when you're not feeling well. Please continue to practice physical distancing. Wear a face covering when physical distancing is a challenge or where it is mandatory to do so. Remember to adhere to gathering limits and wash your hands frequently and thoroughly. These are still the best methods of stopping the spread of this virus and to protect ourselves, our families, our friends, and our neighbors. Thank you.
I guess, Ivana, before I start, folks, we've went through a lot over this pandemic, and we've always been able to get over bumps and hurdles together as a province, all 14.5 million people pulling in the same direction. But I want to acknowledge our team behind us. Dr. Williams has been absolutely incredible, and by the way, they've all been working around the clock. Dr. Heyer, you've heard me refer Dr. Heyer as Dr. Dirk, same person. He's a great doctor. And you've heard me talk about a guy named Matt Anderson for so long, the CEO of Ontario Health, and talk about champions. And there's only one mistake Matt has made throughout this whole pandemic. When we first hired him, it wasn't short after the pandemic hit, and I'm not too sure the time frame, but I'm sure he didn't sign up for this. But only one mistake is he gave me a cell number, and once he gave me a cell number, that was a big mistake, because I call this guy, poor guy, Saturday, Sunday, every day. But he's an absolute champion. The reason our numbers are going up on the testing and watching everything is between public health and Dr. Dirk and Matt's leading the charge over there. I'm so blessed, and I'm where I'm really blessed is having someone as solid as a rock as my Deputy Premier, Minister of Health, Christine Elliott. You've been absolutely incredible, stood beside me every single day throughout this pandemic, and I just want to tell the people I'm very grateful. And behind each and every person here, there's hundreds of professionals behind them, part of their team, their associates that they work with every day, from doctors to technicians, epidemiologists, and everyone else under there. So we have a really, really solid team here in Ontario, and I just want to tell all the folks I'm grateful. Thank you so much. We're ready to take the questions.
Okay, we'll go to the phone line. First question, please.
First question comes from Mike Crowley at CBC News. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Premier Ford. I was told that before your cabinet was a proposal to declare a color-coded zone system to kind of make it clear what the level of risk from COVID-19 is in the different regions throughout the province. So it would be a system similar to what they have in Quebec of red, orange, yellow, and green. And I'm also told that you had a conversation with Premier Legault about that kind of a system.
Yeah.
Why has the government not moved to that sort of a system, given that it would really clearly communicate to people what they should be doing, as opposed to these piecemeal changes to what the restrictions are?
So I talked to Premier Legault about this, and He said it was very, very confusing to the public, and you're constantly changing the colors. And, you know, I really like the where we're going stage. You know, we went through the stages, and now the hot areas, hot spots, we're working on. It's pretty clear, Ottawa, Toronto, and Peel. They're the hot spots. But he told me it's very confusing. And you have color changes every single day, and people are looking what color it is today. So I think we simplify it, and we work on these hot spots.
Follow it.
If I could ask about the backlog in the tests being processed at the labs, it's now more than 90,000 yeah. people who are waiting for their test results. How acceptable is this, and what are you going to do, you know, immediately to shrink that backlog in terms yeah. of adding some sort of lab capacity?
So, very good question. Before I hand it to Matt Anderson, I have to tell you, we were the ones, I've always said, and we're going to be fully transparent, we were the ones who put that out there to get the message out to the people, Mike, that, you know something, we need to all work together. If you aren't showing symptoms, we're asking you, please don't go get a test. And I'll give you an example, Mike, and God bless these little hockey players. You know, I love these hockey players, but I was told two full teams, fully closed, fully in gear, showed up for no other reason. None of them were sick. They just wanted to get a test, and God bless them. You know, something great, good for them. But, guys, we can't have that right now. And the backlog that we put out there, just to tell the people, we just need to get caught up. And, again, a shout-out to these lab technicians. The way I can simplify this, Mike, there's only so many lab technicians in Ontario, no matter who's standing here, and there's only so much reagent in the world. And right now, we're having a challenge, but I have all the confidence in the world in Matt Anderson, the lab technicians. We're going to get caught up. And the other areas that you've heard me talk about all the time, which is an absolute game changer, is these rapid tests that or the home test, if you want to call it. There's quite a few companies, Abbott probably being one of the leaders there. Hopefully we can, and I know the Prime Minister, I spoke to him twice in the last few days, talked to Deputy Prime Minister numerous times. They're doing everything they can in moving these tests forward, so I want to thank them as well. They've done a really, really good job. But folks, just imagine if we could do these self-assessment tests, these rapid tests, man, it's night and day. The other ones that were approved the other day with Abbott, that's going to help, but nothing like these rapid tests. And I'll pass it over to Matt Anderson.
Thank you for the question, Mike, and thank you, Premier. And I can confirm that the Premier does call me on Saturdays, Sundays, Mondays, every day, at all hours. There is no Premier, and there's no one in this province who's more committed to expanding our testing capacity than our Premier. I can assure you of that. Just to answer your question and to maybe add a little bit, the Premier did an awesome job of addressing it. If we think about our 90,000 test backlog, first is that, just to put it into a little bit of context, given the size of our network, we would expect that number to be more like 25,000. So it's really about 65,000 tests that we need to get caught up on and get caught up on as quickly as possible. That's going to happen in two ways. One is as we look to bring more supply online, and that means bringing more lab capacity in. We're right now working with other jurisdictions. We're working with the private sector. We're working with research facilities, universities, to see if there's any more capacity that we can bring online. Even an incremental amount of another 5,000 or 7,000 tests per day will make a big difference for us as we move forward on that. I would also say, and just echo what the Premier has said, we also are asking for folks who don't need a test to stand aside for a bit, let the folks who need the test, particularly those who are symptomatic and vulnerable populations like our seniors, we really want to make sure we get our testing directed there. So there's a demand side and a supply side, and we're working both of those. I would just add as well to the Premier's comments, there are new technologies that are coming our way. We're very excited about the PCR test that the Premier mentioned. But those are incremental steps to our existing infrastructure. The other test that the Premier is talking about, the antigen test, he uses the word game changer, and he's right. That brings in a whole new infrastructure that we don't have access to. And by doing that, we're going to be able to really move forward with our testing, taking the pressure off of our core network. All of that is probably a few weeks away. We are bringing on more capacity on our traditional network now, and we'll continue to do that in increments in the coming months. Right now, we have a challenge. Right now, we're trying to improve that by bringing on some more supply. And right now, we would look to your help on managing the demand side of that as well. Thank you.
Next question.
Next question comes from Brian Lilly at the Toronto Sun. Please go ahead.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Premier. I'm going to admit that I'm pretty confused by all the different recommendations coming forward, the different material. Yesterday, Dr. Dirk, as you call him, was out saying that that restaurants are not a major source of COVID-19 transmission. We've got the hospital association saying they should be closed to indoor dining. We've got Dr. Davila in Toronto saying they should be closed to indoor dining. And today you're announcing more restrictions. So I'm trying to understand why the focus on restaurants. If you had Dr. Heyer out yesterday saying it's not a major concern, why the change today? And what do you say to people that say they should just be closed across the entire province, effective immediately?
Well, I think I should pass this to Dr. Heyer himself. Thank you.
Thank you, Premier. Good afternoon. Hi, Brian. I'm not sure how you got that message. What I talked about yesterday was restaurants in Toronto are a significant factor, according to the Toronto Public Health. Of the 49 outbreaks that they had reviewed over the period of September 20th to September 30th, 39% were restaurants. And within those restaurant areas, there were concerns about different people working in different settings. So some would work in a restaurant or a bar and then potentially in a retail, so they would have different jobs, so intersecting with different colleagues. And they also, about 20% of those, would go and socialize after together with the different groups. And then there were also concerns about how public health measures were being followed within. So I think it aligns with the recommendations the public health measures, from my interpretation. And it was also has been both staff and patrons that had been demonstrating the infections. So open to further clarification from Dr. Williams.
Yes, well, thank you, Premier and Dr. Dirk. In that, we have sought the advice from the three hot zones, that's Ottawa, Peel, and Toronto. As Dr. Heyer had noted, there have been outbreaks related to institutions such as restaurants. At first, it was staff to staff, and some were moving around different places. And then more recently, patrons being impacted as well. So as a result, we wanted to bring in these recommendations, first of all, to decrease the crowding, to keep the social distancing and what's reasonable. That's why we moved down to the 100 for the three zones. That doesn't mean that local municipalities or local medical officers' health can even enhance that further, as you've seen already in Toronto, as the Premier noted, where they moved down to 75. A lot of facilities can't even do that with 75. It depends on the structure and infrastructure of their setting. That means keeping the tables right, six to a table, six foot or 2 meter distancing, masking when you're coming in and out of the place, stay at your table and seat there. So we're trying to do all these aspects that were related to impacting greater social behavior of our public writ large, especially in our hot zones where that kind of activity has been ramping up considerably, and we're seeing a rapid rise in the numbers in Toronto. Sometimes they feel doubling every 6 to 7 days, so we really have to move quickly to try and decrease those opportunities and to see if we can keep everybody working hard, as some have, and on everybody to pull together to flatten this second wave curve as soon as we can, and to help in all the other aspects.
Follow-up?
Dr. Davila, in her letter that she's published now to you, Dr. Williams, she's calling for the entire province to prohibit indoor dining, to only allow individuals to leave their homes for essential trips, and to shut down all indoor classes in gyms and sports team activities. Is there evidence to support such measures? And if so, will you release it along with evidence to back up the public health measures that you're taking now, a big frustration is that these decisions are made and the public doesn't see the data to back up your measures. So are these measures she's asking for backed up by data, and will you start releasing data to support the any new measures you bring in, including today's?
I'll pass that to Dr. Williams.
So to clarify, I did speak with Dr. Davila. I did get her letter. She was certainly recommending those for her jurisdiction. She said to me, I can't speak on behalf of Peel or Ottawa or the rest. So she felt very firmly that she, because of the rapid rise in numbers in within her jurisdiction, she was hoping for more even extensive measures to be taken. She felt she had the data that backed that up. With the restaurants and bars, as Dr. Heyer has already noted, she's seen some in group activities in event centers such as gymnasiums. She's seen some in some other sports groups and that where we haven't seen the rest of the province. So that's one of our challenges, is that we don't see the same thing throughout the province. And so we have these hot zones at the moment where nearly 70 to 80% of the cases every day ramping up. Even Toronto today makes up half of all the cases, slightly more than half. So these are the ones that are most concerning. So we take her recommendations. She's brought them forward. She gives them, we ask for evidence and data on that. We'll get that. But that's what she would like for us to consider as far as for her jurisdiction, the City of Toronto. But she was clear when she spoke to me, she was not trying to apply that to other jurisdictions, as that would be up to their local medical officer of health and their local jurisdictions.
Next question.
Next question comes from Nicole Lampa from CTV News Kitchener. Please go ahead.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Premier. If local medical officers of health, like in Waterloo Region or Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph, or Halton, asked to be considered to be placed in the hot zones, would the province approve this type of measure or request?
Yeah, I'm going to pass that to Dr. Williams. Thank you.
So it's a good question, and we have already had a meeting. We advised all the medical officers of the changes that were coming ahead of time. We've also asked them to say, if there's data and information that you think you should be considered in there, and as again we've said, it's data driven, and to give that information, because we need that to advise the minister and then up into the premier and cabinet if there's further changes accordingly. So we haven't ruled out that they can't. We've asked them to, if they are interested, if they feel it's necessary, that they have some information as well as data and statistics to show why they would need to move into that area. We would like to see that in our public health measures table, would look at that, and if we had to change our advice and further accordingly to the minister, our table and my office would do so. But right now it's in the early days, but we've made them aware of that, and we'll be listening to their advice and directions as they seek to bring down the curve in their own local jurisdictions.
Follow-up.
With Thanksgiving coming up, are you asking residents in Toronto, Peel, or Ottawa not to visit family in outlying areas like Waterloo Region or Guelph and vice versa?
Well, I'll pass this to the Minister of Health, but we got to keep in mind people's mental health as well. Do you know many people live by themselves or maybe live with a roommate or something in Thanksgiving, and if they keep within their social circle? But we always, always have to remember there's a tremendous amount of people that live by themselves, and it's very concerning, and mental health is always a huge issue. I'll pass it over to Minister Elliott.
Well, we are asking people to keep their social gatherings as small as possible as to immediate family. But as the Premier said, there are a number of people who do live alone, who are experiencing isolation. We want them to be able to have a connection to another group for mental health and social purposes. So we're just asking people to be reasonable. Please try to keep your group, your gatherings small to immediate households as much as possible.
Next question.
Next question comes from Richard Southern from 680 News. Please go ahead.
Hi, Richard.
Hi, Mr. Premier. Just to sort of follow on that last question, I mean, you say immediate households. Does this mean, for example, I shouldn't see my mom here in Toronto for Thanksgiving, who lives in the city but with whom I don't live with? Is that what it means? Can we see our folks for Thanksgiving, Mr. Premier?
I'll pass that over to the Minister of Health. What we're saying is keep the social circles tight. Don't go out and have the extended families of 20, 25 people. But I hear your question loud and clear.
Well, what we're really trying to prevent is further community transmission. So we want people to keep their gatherings small. But I think I'll refer this to Dr. Williams for further specifics on this issue.
Thanks, Minister Elliott. Dr. Williams and I work so closely together. Sometimes I seem like I'm saying his words, but I think he'll join in after me. But I think it's really important you ask the question as to whether you should go and see your mom. I think everybody has to think carefully about where they're going to and what they're doing and assess the potential risk, assess the potential chance for transmission. What we're hearing is that contacts, when a positive case has occurred, are having upwards of 25 contacts that they've been that they've exposed themselves to. That's a tremendous number. That's way more than very careful and considered intersection with others. So I need to think about what risk may be presented when you go to that setting. If you go to that setting, taking all of the precautions that are necessary to prevent any potential form of transmission. So I think Dr. Williams may have some more public health approach to it than I do.
Well, as usual, Dr. Hires pretty well covered everything there. We're asking people, because of the conditions and systems right now, it's like with a winter storm coming, we have a current environment we have to deal with. So you have to use precautions. We know that when we said household, because we did the circles, and people in the end of the summer into September, just to move those way out beyond what they should have done. And so we had, the idea was that you knew who was in your group, you knew that they were not exposed to anything, you knew you didn't expose yourself. So if you're going to have, for example, we said household, you may already have a relationship with a single parent who may be living on their own, that you've always all along had them into your place, and you have maintained that sanctity of that protection, because you don't want to expose them in that. So we're seeing household, we didn't get down to any tight definition. We know there's single people who have been with a group of four or five friends all the time, being vigilant and careful of what they're doing. As you know, some people, it's very important for mental health reasons. So we haven't gone down to really tight definition of household, because we want to say smaller. You have to refocus back down, because we said 10, but people with 10, another 10, and 20, 30, and they just went open on that, and we have a problem now. So we say hunker back down, pick your ones carefully, and especially at this time, much like I said, when there's a big winter storm coming, hunker down and be careful for the next while, because we do not want this to take off. We want to flatten the curve, and this is just another way to do that, even during Thanksgiving.
Follow up.
Thank you. Mr. Premier, just on another matter, if I may, I mean, you've spoken obviously about how tough it's been for the bars and restaurants.
Yeah.
I've heard from some here in the city this week about their insurance premiums being hiked as much as 700%. In some cases, making, you know, life almost impossible for these bars and restaurants. I'm wondering, sir, do you consider that price gouging, and would your government consider a moratorium on these insurance premium hikes for bars and restaurants?
Well, you know something, good question, Richard. I'm not going to rail off on these insurance companies again, because I think everyone knows how I feel. But the hike their insurance policies up 700%. I know that the Minister of Finance, we've had deep discussions about this. He's in conversations with the Insurance Bureau and other large insurance companies. But again, you know, insurance companies, this is time to help these folks out, okay? Bottom line is, you guys are making a ton of money, no matter if it's car insurance, home insurance, or business insurance. Give these guys a break. That's my personal opinion.
Next question.
Next question comes from Sean Jeffords from the Canadian Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sean.
Well, hi, everyone. I wanted to ask about social circles again. I have to be honest, I'm a bit unclear about what's being communicated here today. The news release that's been sent out says that there is now a pause being placed on social circles. Is that across the province? Is that just in the hotspots? or am I simply misinterpreting this?
No, before I pass Dr. Williams, I was on the call, like a four-hour call, I think, with caucus yesterday, and one of our MPPs told me a story. I'm just going to share this story with you. You know, as Dr. Williams said, pick and choose, and someone asked me about their, can I go see my mom? You know, we all love our moms. I couldn't even get through a question yesterday, and I apologize. I get choked up talking about my mom. But in saying that, there's a story, caucus member told me, there was a person working in one part of the province and not knowing he had COVID. He went to go see his 84-year-old mom. Now the 84-year-old mom is in the hospital with COVID, and inadvertently, you know, no one would obviously do that on purpose, but all we're saying is just be careful, and I'll pass it to Dr. Williams for clear guidance. I think what he's saying is just keep your circles tight now. That's what I think he's getting at. Thank you.
Yes, that's, as the Premier said, that's the real key message. We went with the social circles, and for that time in June and April, people, or I should say May and June, people picked up on it, did it very carefully, but then got a lot more casual, and I found people linking with this group or that group, and there was just a lack of adherence to the standard and the methods. So as people said, the bubbling had been lost. So we're trying to refocus that back in again in a way that says a bit smaller than before, but then you can choose that where we're not saying an exact number. The key thing is that you want to make sure right now, with the amount of transmission, especially in the hot zones, and it's and happening in various parts of the province, that you know that you have not brought it in, you will not pass it on, and the person that you're going to have involved with that in your household, because they're using they're in your house, they're using your washroom facilities, so you want to be assured that you have in a way a covenant or agreement with each other that you're doing your best and utmost, so that the event that the Premier talked about, no one wants to have that happen, and we want to make sure, especially for this next time, until we get this curve flattened down again and things get safer again, we are going to have to really be focused at this moment.
Hello?
Yeah, just guess what, Dr.
Premier Ford, I have a question from my colleagues who are working on the broader international story about President Trump's coronavirus positive test. First of all, wanted to get your reaction to that, but also you had a staff member who recently tested positive for COVID, and I'm wondering if you can talk about the measures that you and your staff are taking to protect yourselves. Are you wearing masks during your meetings? Is cabinet wearing masks?
Yeah.
You know, obviously you are out and about in the province. What are you taking? What measures are you using to prevent risk of spread, your staff?
Excellent question. I'll talk about my staff first, and that's what I was going to talk about after Dr. Williams. So we've tightened the circle up real tight down here. Everyone's wearing masks. It's mandatory to wear masks throughout Queen's Park here. We've cut it right down to a very tight group. I think it's probably under six people down here that we see every single day, and so it's absolutely essential. You know, as for President Trump and the First Lady and Vice President Biden, you know, everyone knows I've had my differences with President Trump. You know, I've called him out, but believe me, I wouldn't want this to happen to my worst enemy. And for Vice President Biden or President Trump and the First Lady, I just want to wish them all the best. Prayers and thoughts are with them. We may have our political differences, but it's no time. It's put it aside. I'm praying for all of them to get better soon. And again, I don't care what political stripe. I would not want this against my worst enemy. I can tell you that. It's not good. So just a speedy recovery to anyone who has it.
Next question.
Next question is from Rob Ferguson from the Toronto Star. Please go ahead.
Hi, Rob.
Hi, Premier. Inevitably, there will be people that think that your new measures today haven't gone far enough. What do you say to them?
Well, you know something, and this is what I've said before about the health table and Dr. Williams. You know, you could go from one extreme or the other extreme. I think the health table and with consultation throughout the province and caucus and cabinet and other people, Dr. Williams has come up with a very fair balance. We do have to keep the economy going. Health is the number one priority. Without our health, we don't have an economy. but I think he's been very reasonable on be it the banquet halls at 50 or even restaurants to keep them still going. And I said the other day, the best way we can help them is keep them safe, but keep them going as well. And each local chief medical officer, all 34 of them, will have their local opinions on that. But I think they've been very pragmatic. They really have. You know, I hear I forget what they're called, the group that goes out, Freedom Fighters or something. They're showing up to my house. Like, I get all these groups in front of my house. I don't care. You know what bothers me about that is my neighbors. They have all little kids. And you got some Freedom Fighters, whatever that means. I don't even know what they're up about, but there's going to be 100 of them. Guys, just to let you know, I won't be at home tomorrow, so give my neighbors some respect. I love my neighbors, and I apologize to my neighbors. This is happening to them. So that's it.
Follow up.
Yes, thank you. Just switching over to the end of walk-in testing starting Sunday and the move to appointments. What measures are in place to make sure that, you know, the lineup, so to speak, whether on the phone or online to get testing, are not as bad as the, you know, the physical lineups have been at assessment centers? I'm not sure if they're actually, yeah, any of them are actually taking online appointments, but I did hear on the radio this morning a woman saying she was on the phone on hold for hours trying to get through to an assessment center to make an appointment for testing.
So good question, Rob. Before I pass it to Matt Anderson, you know, we're just asking as we make this transition, the people that have a little bit of patience. We need to make this transition, but what it does, it gives people certainty. Nothing's worse, and as the weather changes, to be standing in line for hours if it's snowing or if it's raining and it's cold outside. It gives people certainty, and what else it does, it helps get caught up with the backlog, but even more importantly, it allows us to get the results a lot quicker as well and get back to people. So I just ask for the next few days, please have patience. We're going to do everything we can. But in saying all that, we're still testing more people than anywhere in the country. Matter of fact, more than everywhere in Canada combined, we're still testing. So, you know, this guy behind me, Matt Anderson, I know I've said it before, but he has more pressure on him. I guess we all do, but he has more pressure than anything on this testing. And the guy's just stellar. I think I called you last night. What was it, 10, 11 o'clock at night? Just to tell Matt, keep your head up, buddy. You're doing great, and we're all behind you. So I'll pass it over to Matt Anderson.
Thank you, Premier. As I said, I believe he's a little more jealous, generous than he needs to be. But thank you. To your question, in terms of what we're going to be able to do with the assessment centers, as the Premier said, it does allow us to screen. It does mean that people don't stand in line for 5 hours only to find out that they're not eligible for a test. So we are going to be able to do that. Through the screening, we're also going to be able to prioritize the most vulnerable and the people with symptoms so that we can make sure that they're getting a test more quickly. And it's a little bit counterintuitive, but what's happening right now with so many people coming in on a walk-in basis, we're not able to distribute the load quite as efficiently as we could to ultimately get that test result back to people. And that's really where we're trying. We want to make sure that people get the test result back as quickly as possible. So even if it might feel like if I went down to an assessment center, I'm waiting for a few hours to get the specimen collected, and now I'm going to wait until tomorrow to get the specimen collected, but by doing it through this system, we're actually going to be able to shave off some of the testing time on the other side. So you'll get that result faster once we have this in all across the province, and that's really our goal, to make it easier, faster, and to make sure that the people who really need these tests are able to access them. Thank you.
Next question.
Next question comes from Elizabeth Payne from the Ottawa Citizen. Please go ahead.
Hi, how you doing? Hello?
Elizabeth, go ahead.
Hi, sorry about that. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Elizabeth.
This morning, Ottawa's medical officer held a press conference and said the health system in the city is in crisis. The testing system is near collapse. I'm wondering whether the measures announced today go far enough to make a difference in Ottawa.
Well, I'll pass it to Dr. Williams. Thank you.
And I'll make a few comments, and I'll ask Dr. Heyer to follow up on that, because we've had conversations extensively with the Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Etches, and their team, as we seek to look at these capacity issues, be it testing, with Mr. Anderson talking about that, be it in the hospital sector, again, back to Mr. Anderson's area, and the long-term care with long-term care facilities. Different components that the Premier and the Minister were talking about yesterday and the day before to alleviate these issues there. They're coming, they're moving on that, as well as looking at how we do the case contact management, supporting the staff at a place like Ottawa Public Health that are getting overloaded and worn out. And so we're trying to move quickly to bolster that up with various system enhancements. So, but I'm going to ask Dr. Heyer to add a few more comments, if that's okay, to comment about the situation in Ottawa.
I'm going to pretend that I'm Dr. Dirk for a moment. So it's Matt Anderson speaking. I just wanted to add to what Dr. Williams just talked about. I believe it was yesterday morning, myself, Dr. Heyer, Dr. Williams, and Deputy Angus met with the health system leadership from Ottawa. They put out a plan of the number of things that need to be done to try to create some more capacity and give some relief in the city of Ottawa. That plan was very, very reasonable. It included looking at how can we create more capacity immediately in our long-term care and in our hospitals. And Deputy Angus is moving on those, I believe, as we speak, to move that forward. Also on the testing side, we are looking at, and going back to the earlier question, this again goes back to the concept of having scheduled appointments. It allows us to move testing around. So when we collect the specimen, we want to get it to the testing center or the lab that can process that test the fastest. Right now, what tends to happen is we just send to the local lab, but that lab may be overloaded. In the case of Ottawa, we've seen quite a bit of pressure on our local labs. Through the scheduled mechanism, we can look at moving some of those specimens to other labs, be Kingston or somewhere else, shaving some time off. Instead of sending them to the lab, they sit at the lab, they then get redistributed to another lab. We want to get them to the lab that can process them as quickly as possible. So all of those steps are in place to try to support our friends in Ottawa. They presented a wonderful plan, and we're going to support them in every way we can.
Follow up?
Yes, I'm just wondering, people are being told today to limit close contact to only those in their household as much as possible. Is that a mixed message when banquet halls, even with reduced numbers, bars and restaurants remain open? How do you limit that contact if you're going to a bar or a restaurant?
I better send it to Dr. Williams. Thank you.
So we have put in place these recommendations because in your household, usually around 6-7 people, and there's different numbers that are in there, you know who they are, you're familiar. Often people will go to the restaurant with their family, and they're supposed to be at a table with 6. There's supposed to be the distancing maintained at the same time. Same as you're going to a banquet or event, we ask you again to sit at a table with 6. Keep the distancing, wear the masking if you're going to be moving around, and keep the social distancing. So this is this concept of keeping these number of contacts down to those you know, and limit your moving around and your exposure to others, and you exposing them to yourself. So this is consistent with that, and we hope to have the public really focus on that aspect in the next number, especially the next 4 weeks ahead, as we seek to bring this under control.
So be final question.
Last question comes from Jeff Gray from the Globe and Mail. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jeff.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Mr. Premier, critics have been pointing to these warnings from the Hospital Association. We have another one from the nurses, the Ottawa Public Health today. Are you willing to acknowledge some of what your critics have been saying is true, that whatever plan you had in place for a second wave has clearly been overtaken by events?
I totally disagree with them. You know, we've been working around the clock. We've had this plan for a few months now, and let's just talk about our plan. We're putting in 5.1 million doses for the flu shots. We're putting over $1 billion into testing and tracing, contact tracing, which is incredible. We put $500 million into long-term care. We're hiring 3,700 more healthcare workers. 3,700 more healthcare workers.
Our plan is working. We're making sure that we're testing more than anyone in the entire country combined. And even under the constraints and under the pressures of a worldwide reagent, per se, everyone's having a run on reagent, along with having these lab technicians, and God bless the lab technicians going around the clock. You know something? I believe it's a great plan. It's the best plan in the country, and I'm thankful that we have these people standing behind me and their teams behind me. So it's never a decision of one person or even the four folks behind me. It's a team approach, and we consult and we collaborate. And not to mention my conversations with the federal government and all the other premiers yesterday. And I got to give a shout out to Premier Blaine Higgs for saying, hey, New Brunswick's open. Doug, we're short on reagent, but our testing abilities are here. Send them to us. Stephen McNeil, Premier Stephen McNeil, Nova Scotia, thank you so much for your support, and Premier Moe and Premier Kenny. Everyone's pitching in. I remember when we were short the PPEs, Premier Kenny sent a plane or a few truckloads to help us out. We're all Canadians. We're all in this together. And you know what I find is it's so easy when you aren't in the trenches to sit back and be the armchair quarterback. And we're doing as a province, as a people, 14 and a half million people. And I say I play the smallest part in this. Everyone's pitching in. We're doing good. Did everyone, you know, let their guard down out a little bit when we had under 100 cases? Everyone thought it was okay. Yeah, some people did. And now we have to get through this again, like we have with everything else, folks. We've done it before when we've hit hurdles, and we're going to do it again with your support. And I'm grateful.
So. Follow up.
If I could get you to respond to something else that critics have been saying over the past few weeks, and by critics I mean also ICU physicians, epidemiologists. They're concerned about, so the government's been too opaque about what external independent scientific advice it's getting. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what kind of advice the government is getting. And two, similar to seeing Dr. Davila's letter today with these measures that she wanted to see, shouldn't we be able to see what measures the public health table and Dr. Williams recommend to cabinet before cabinet decides on them? Would you be willing to make those public?
Yeah, well, first I'm going to hand it over, and before I hand it over for Dr. Williams, I have a great deal of respect for all the doctors and nurses, and I've been thanking them day in and day out. But no matter if you have any group, be thousands of great doctors we have in Canada, or any other organization, I could pick out a few that may disagree. And keep in mind, we have some really tough cabinet and caucus meetings, believe me. It's not, everyone's not all one way or the other. We have some really deep conversations and holding each and every one of us accountable. I can assure you that when you have a four-hour cabinet meeting and a four-hour caucus meeting, it gets everything on the table. So everyone's listening, and we're collaborating, and at the end of the day, we're in this together, and we're going to get through this together. So I'll pass it to Dr. Williams.
Well, yes, and as the Premier said, it's a huge team. And as far as people saying, look at external scientific documents, we're looking at scientific documents all the time. We're looking at the quality of those documents. Are they peer-reviewed? Have they been assessed correctly? We have our teams looking at, there's a surveillance group, there is a testing group, there's a scientific table, there's the work of the modeling with Dr. Brown. We did a session earlier this week with Mr. Anderson, Dr. Brown, and myself. Their modeling people are looking at scientific documents. We have our federal, provincial, territorial meetings, and they have huge committees and groups looking at all the scientific documents coming in. This is new. This is unprecedented. We're looking at all the material coming in, one, to assess what's the quality of it. Is it good? Is it peer-reviewed? Does it make sense? And sifting that through. Nothing's thrown out. We want to look at all the information that's there. Sometimes people on the outside said, well, I read two or three articles. I think this is where it's at. they need to look at a lot more articles too, and I think that's part of the overall broad review. So as the Premier said, we're backed by a whole team, and we have Public Health Ontario, we've got the Schools of Public Health, and I talked to another scientist yesterday, wanted to give me his perspective. I'm open to hear what they have to say, and again, we vet that through our groups to hear what it is, because I really depend heavily on their review of all these matters, lifetime basis, to go it again and review it, so it's not a closed shop at all, and we'll keep on top of it as the science is rapidly evolving, and we're looking forward to even better research, more material to come ahead. We welcome it all.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Have a safe weekend.
There you go. It's a long one. The Premier of Ontario, along with his chief medical officer, his health minister, and a huge part of his team. What they didn't announce maybe is the number one headline. There was some discussion that Ontario would go to a color-coded alert system, but the Premier said he talked to the Premier of Quebec, and that was just too confusing. So did make some changes. Interesting to note that no one in the media, aside from maybe Brian Lilly of Sun Media, who got a little close, nobody asked the question, do these steps go too far? Everything was centered around, do they go far enough? Still some confusion as well. I'll give you an example. We're tightening up restrictions on mask policies. Peel in Ottawa. Now we will have to wear a mask on public transit and while shopping. I live in Ottawa. Thought that was already the rule. People are wearing them when they shop and when they're on public transit. But so it'll take a while to sort it all out. But the bottom line is Thanksgiving is going to be a lot smaller than usual if you planned on something big. And life got a little bit tougher for restaurants, gyms, and banquet halls. Try to have a good weekend anyway. I will talk to you next Friday. Who knows what the world will hold by then. I'm Bill Carroll.